Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from Wild Turkey Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey. Let's tune in to their one-on-one with Jamal, a real bartender from Old Fourth Ward in Atlanta.
I really get into the backstory of whatever I'm pouring. Out of respect, there are literally years of experience behind these bottles. Wild Turkey, same recipe since 1942. If you want a true classic, this is what you want to order.
Wild Turkey. Wild Turkey Distilling Company, Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. Copyright 2020, Campari America, New York, New York. Never compromise, drink responsibly.
Welcome to the Tuesday, October 6th edition of the RotoWire NFL Podcast, Week 4 in the books. I'm Joe Bartle at JB Fantasy Sports. As always, alongside me is Jake Letarski at RotoJake. Before we get underway, I want to get a word from our sponsors, Prediction Strike. Prediction Strike is a fantasy sports stock market on which you can buy and sell shares of professional athletes as if they were stock. Ever heard someone say, "I've had stock in Patrick Mahomes since day one"? Well, great. You'd be off to a great start because you know this would happen. It's a reality. Create a portfolio of all your favorite athletes and get closer to the game than ever before. To get started, simply visit PredictionStrike.com to create an account, then deposit funds to buy, sell, and hold shares of your favorite players just like you would real stock. Each game is like an earnings report. If the player beats his prediction, his stock moves up. It's really that simple. You can just trade your shares of players at any time as long as the player isn't currently in a game. Get started today by visiting PredictionStrike.com and sign up with the code ROTOWIRE to get an additional $10 with your first deposit of $20 or more. Again, PredictionStrike.com. Use promo code ROTOWIRE to get an additional $10 with your first deposit of $20. All right, so we had two Monday Night Football games for Week 4. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, I've always been an advocate of Monday Night Football doubleheaders, but I'm not sure I wanted it to happen in this way exactly, but, you know, here we are, and this is the reality we might see the rest of the season. Maybe I would bet Monday Night doubleheaders are not over.
Yeah, you know what? That's a good point. Selfishly, I was annoyed, A, because the spotlight couldn't be on solely on our 4-0 Packers, and also B, I had to stay up about an hour later than I normally would have because they had to reschedule the game, push it back a little bit later. Anyway, two big takeaways from this from both of the Monday Night contests are probably one of the two or three of the biggest pickups for this week as well. So should we start first with our hometown favorites or Damien Harris?
Let's go in order of the games. Right, you know, let's keep it fair. Let's talk about the Chiefs and the Patriots. Man, you know, ever since I had seen that Cam Newton tested positive, I thought 100% Bill Belichick will find a way to make this work in his advantage somehow, because that's just what he does all the time. And I would have thought they would have done whatever they could to prevent this game from being played without Cam Newton. You don't want to play this game where it's going to have major implications on seeding in the AFC playoffs without your starting quarterback. But they went ahead and did it and saw very below average, I'd say mixed results, but mixed results is optimistic.
Yeah, it was a complimentary, if you were to call it that. I mean, we figured, and I was with you, I did not believe this game was going to happen, but we figured if it were to happen, it was going to be a pretty run-oriented game script from the Patriots' perspective. And lo and behold, they gave 28 carries to both Damien Harris and Burkhead combined. James White also had three carries as well as that. The kind of bigger news is that Brian Hoyer, who entered as the starter, got removed in the third quarter, fourth quarter. But at that point, I had turned to the Packers game, so I was like, oh, Stidham's in. This is kind of crazy.
See, I set up the new place in my basement where I literally have a 50-inch TV right above a 45-inch TV. So doubleheaders are perfect, especially if they overlap, because I'm fine. That's how I've been watching, you know, a little bit of playoff baseball, a little bit of NBA Finals action. You know, that kind of stuff on the side here. But anyway, yeah, so I see the stat lines for the Patriots running backs. And my big warning to everybody is, remember, this is Bill Belichick in the New England backfield. You have to remember that Sonny Michel did not play.
Yep.
And, excuse me, it's a little misleading that Harris had all those carries and those yards, because Harris only ended up with 23 snaps, which is 31% of the snap count. So in comparison, Rex Burkhead had more snaps, 26 snaps, 35%. James White was on the field for 40 snaps, 53%. So, yeah, Harris had a nice week, but, I mean, how confident are you that he's the guy the rest of the way out and is suddenly going to kind of push these other guys out for playing time?
So here's the problem that I have. Harris has not necessarily a higher draft pedigree. Sonny Michel is a first-round pick, Harris a third-round pick. But we've heard momentum of Damien Harris being a thing for, I don't know, man, 4-5 months now. There's been a lot of people from the New England camp, whether it be beat writers or otherwise, saying, Damien Harris, watch out. He looks good. He was a very popular favorite of many people in best ball leagues. Mario Puig does a lot of the best ball leagues. Prior, like in our July-August range, was pounding the drums for him as well, among other people in the RotoWire sphere, and certainly in fantasy overall. So we're very aware of what Damien Harris is as a player and what he can be. I feel like he's a higher upside player than Sonny Michel and has the same role as Sonny Michel. So many people are dropping Sonny Michel, and rightfully so. He had the 9 carries, 117 yards the week before, but it really was nothing more than like a weirder-looking version of Jordan Howard, who is like the goal line vulture for the Dolphins. I don't know. Like, I think there's room to pick up Damien Harris and say, hey, if I need 50 or 60 yards, I think he can do that for me. But if you're believing Harris is anything more than perhaps a better version of Sonny Michel, then I think you're going about this the wrong way.
Yeah, the one area of optimism for me with Harris is that this was a game, I mean, they weren't overly behind the entire game. I mean, they were down 3-6 in the first half. And, you know, the final score is a little bit misleading because, you know, you've got the interceptions and the turnovers at the end here. But in a game where they're behind, he was still productive. So that's a little bit that's a little bit positive. But again, man, I just these New England backfield guys, they just rub me the wrong way. And I'm not, I guess I see where you're coming from. You buy him, you start him as a flex a couple times when you have to, but he's not anybody that's really going to change the trajectory of your fantasy season.
So let's play this out. Are you going to make Harris a number one waiver wire claim?
I would say no.
I'm not either. And I've been pretty aggressive throughout the first four weeks of the season going, pick up this guy, right? And it hasn't always worked out. Malcolm Brown comes to mind immediately for us. I'm not going that direction with Damien Harris, so I wouldn't get attracted to the 17 for 100.
Yeah. So what about Fab then? What kind of percentage?
Well, that was the next question I was going to go with. I don't know.
I have a number in my head. 12%.
Okay, and I was going to go 10 to 12%. So we're in lockstep on that. I think that's the right idea. And again, you're putting that bid in, assuming Harris is going to have this Sonny Michel role. Michel was placed on injured reserve; is going to be out for the next 3 weeks at minimum. There is something to that, but in a lot of standard leagues, and certainly like 10-team leagues, Michel was getting dropped everywhere. I mean, it's not like people were really aggressively picking him up. And I think you have to think the same way with Damien Harris, only a little bit more upside.
Yeah, Damien Harris had 8 more carries or 7 more carries than Sony Michel had in any single game. So I think there's a little bit different there. It's not a direct comparison.
Well, I bet you that's the watermark, though. I think that's probably – I bet you this is Harris's season high for carries, to be honest. And he looked fresh and he looked good, which is what you'd imagine after his first game coming back. And it sounded more or less like he could have been available if there wasn't this injured reserve thing where he can – brings me back after 3 weeks.
Yeah, the other one downside with grabbing Harris right now is that Broncos are fifth in the league against opposing running backs. Then they have a bye week. Then they've got San Francisco, who's number one. So, like, the upcoming schedule, yeah, you start him. You can start him because of opportunity, but the expectations definitely have to be in check. After that, week nine on, that schedule looks pretty nice, and especially presuming you get Cam Newton back, then his value would shoot up, but that'll be right around the time that Michelle is again available here. So it's a complicated situation. I think we're both – this is just – I mean, honestly, straight up off the bat, this is a week where waiver wires aren't super attractive. I don't think there's anybody that you use a number one claim on this week.
First time and all most season,
of these,
really.
Yeah, first time all season. I mean, yeah, Harris is no – he's no Mike Davis type of pickup, you know, that kind of thing. So, you know, nobody that – we're not really going over 10-15% on really any one option this week.
Yeah, I don't think so. And the reason I brought up the Brian Hoyer, Jared Stidham thing is because that's the other part of this equation that's making it down. Maybe if Newton is playing the whole time and we have a competent quarterback situation, there's going to be more goal line opportunities for Damien Harris to potentially score. But we saw how the quarterbacks played last night. Stidham – the one pick was just a drop pass that ended up being a pick six. I don't know if I look into that. Hoyer had that horrible sack that cost them points at the end of the half. But Stidham did throw a ball underthrew a ball, which really kind of was the game, ended the game for the Chiefs' perspective on that pick. The quarterback situation isn't great. I don't think the offense is going to look very good for the Patriots. For them to win, it's a 13, 16, 17 kind of game, right?
Yeah. So Cam Newton's apparently asymptomatic. I mean, I haven't seen much on his status later. I don't know if he's going to be rushing back anytime soon. But for your two quarterback leagues, I mean, did they give the ball back to Hoyer or because they made this change? Is it suddenly a Stidham?
I think it's a Stidham thing because we heard all about Stidham being the guy before they signed Newton. I don't know. Like Mario and John, I put a lot of my faith in them. They both think Stidham is terrible. I don't think he's that bad, but maybe if he plays as bad as he did again.
Remember in like early July basketball leagues, everyone's taking Stidham?
Yeah, I did. I have him in my best ball league.
Yeah. See, I didn't do any best balls that
well.
That
I,
early,
I partnered but, him with Newton, so it's fine. I mean, don't worry about it.
So you're fine then.
Yeah.
But yeah, I saw those people that were waiting to make their team name Stardom or Stidham. You might have another week of that at best.
But, I'm so uncreative that I just like all these team names that people do. I just laugh at them every time, and then I think to myself, God, I'm horrible because I could never have come up with these.
I don't have that many great ones. Mine are mostly dumb inside jokes I have with my friends.
Well, I'm sure people just pair it off of somebody else. But even like wherever the origin is of a really good fantasy football name, like they need to have a job somewhere in this capacity because they're important people in the fantasy realm. All
right, let's come from somewhere. Yep.
Yeah, let's move on. I was just thinking of like Family Guy and where the original dirty joke came from.
We went through a Monday Night Football game, didn't even touch on any of the Chiefs.
Do we need to?
No, we don't need to. It's a waiver wire show. I'm just saying, like, I mean, a lot of people were picking up Hardman or Harris or to try to salvage the best of a bad situation, especially after Devontae and Julio was questionable.
Hardman
was
beat
questionable.
Me in two leagues, and I only kept thinking of you over here, who I've been doing with the podcast now for the last two months or so, saying, hey, Hardman, wide receiver three, and I'm like, well, you know, great, but they have to get some of the guys actually off there, DeMarcus Robinson in particular. And here he goes, 4 catches, 27 yards, gets the jet sweep pass for a touchdown. That ended up costing me in two leagues.
A little underwhelming for Mahomes owners, but you know, you can't be complaining too much. He got the result in real life. It just wasn't necessarily a shootout, so you had to keep expectations in check. Naturally, I didn't think this game was going to be played, so I dropped the Kansas City defense in a couple places. And here we are. He ended up picking up the Packers defense, which wasn't so bad anyway, but still not quite what we were at. So, yeah, I guess we can move on to the Packers.
It was
pretty status quo for the Chiefs.
Don't rob me of this. I'm very excited to talk about Robert Tonyan, our boy, Big Bob, right? Like, this is it.
Yeah, so the Robert Tonyan nickname thing is something important that needs to be discussed because we haven't the announcers don't quite have it. We don't quite have one in Wisconsin yet. As an MMA guy myself, I'm a fan of the fighter Robert Whittaker, who goes by Bobby Bobby Knuckles. So I just think Bobby T is appropriate in this situation. You said Big Bob?
Oh, I think it's Big Bob all the way. That's the perfect Wisconsin nickname is Big Bob. And they were trying to do the baby Kittle thing last night. I don't know if you heard that in the broadcast.
Well, because Kittle was
like, because they worked out like once. Like, all right, cool. You're not baby Kittle.
I mean, you're not baby anyone when you catch three touchdown passes on Monday night, prime time.
Yeah, so. Fine. But, I mean, Kittle had 15 catches, 150 yards last or Sunday. If you're going to be a baby to anyone, it's Kittle. But I just think they're completely different players. It doesn't matter. The nickname thing is not important. I don't know. How dare you say that? Because this is a waiver wire podcast, yes. And people are going to be running out there to go ahead and get Robert Tonyan. 6 catches, 98 yards, 3 touchdowns. The only issue, he has a bye this week. Both the Packers and Lions will not play in Week 5. It's not due to COVID stuff. This is scheduled. So the Tonyan train is going to have to slow down, I think, a little bit.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you were relying on Noah Fant, for example, who is injured and probably – I don't know if he's been on IR yet or is going to – if you're relying on Noah Fant, if you were relying on Tyler Higbee, for example, who just doesn't run routes anymore, apparently. You know, if you're relying on some of those guys and are thinking that Robert Tonyan is going to be the big, big solution to your fantasy football season, this is like the peak right here of 2020.
It has to be. I mean, it just is. I know he's got 5 touchdowns, so he actually is tied with Mike Evans for the league lead in touchdowns at the moment and certainly has more touchdowns than any other tight end at the moment as well. But 5 touchdowns through really what amounted to 3 games, I think this is a byproduct. And if you can recall last year when Devontae Adams was down, I think specifically that Chiefs game, that was the first time that I think the national audience really was like, oh shit, Aaron Jones is a thing, right? He caught that game-winning touchdown. It was a great throw by Rodgers. Yeah. But this is the byproduct of Devontae Adams and, of course, Alan Lazard, the core surgery, out. Is it the Packers offense under Matt LaFleur is able to make things be things? And I say Aaron Jones last year and Robert Tonyan this year. I don't know if he's a guy that I'm investing any more than 10 to 12% of my budget for.
Well, first of all, got all the credit in the world to LaFleur working this 2 tight end, 3 running backs on the field all the time, having his running backs line up his receivers. Who needed to spend a first or second round pick on a receiver when you've got, you know, a brilliant schemer like this? But again, I just don't know how sustainable this is. So, and of course, then there's the bye week next week. So if someone wants to spend more than 15% of their fab on Robert Tonyan, then sit on him for a week and maybe end up cutting him because of another COVID situation or something like that, I'm going to let somebody else do it. Tonyan, he looks the part, absolutely. It's him and Sternberger and a lot of 2 tight end sets.
And Sternberger didn't even get a catch last night.
Yeah, Mercedes Lewis is still a little bit banged up. Josiah DeGuara had to be kind of helped off the field last night. Sternberger, I think, got hurt by some of those early drops that Rodgers gave him, and you know, right off the hands.
We don't have the snap kind of information available yet. I know he was out there. I had a over under not placed somewhere on his receiving totals, and he didn't get anywhere near that. And I thought the tight ends are going to get involved. And I thought Tonyan would too. I just didn't think it to this extent. Worth pointing out, at least one of those touchdowns, for sure, I think it was the second one, was like wide open. Somebody fell down. They were trying to hold him and just completely fell down. Got a 25-yard touchdown out of that play. Like the production, you're going to look at those numbers and be like, wow, this is incredible, especially for tight ends. If I had an Austin Hooper or Noah Fant or TJ Hockenson, who's also on bye this week, it just dial back the expectations a little bit.
So Rodgers threw 33 passes, right? And I'm looking at their targets. He only targeted wide receivers 12 times, unless you count Tyler Irvin as a receiver, which you kind of basically do at this side. He's a running back only in number. But that's just going to change. We're going to have Devontae Adams after the bye. I've seen rumored a lot of the talk is like 5 weeks total for Lazard. But once Adams and Lazard are back, I just don't see 6 to 8 tight end targets the way that this is set up. You know, those guys are set up to help the run game move. So I'm a little bit hesitant on, you know, going all out for Tonyan in the fab this week.
Yeah, it's great for prop bets if you're to say, hey, touchdown's going to score by tight end. Well, there you go. I think that makes more sense in the context that you imagined with Adams and Lazard being back. But right now, especially with the bye week, like if there wasn't the bye week happening, maybe I'd be a bit more optimistic about Tanya's fantasy stats, but I'm just not going that aggressively. Sticking with the Packers-Falcons game for one more player, Jamal Williams, 8 catches, 95 yards. He got 8 carries for 10 yards as well. I don't know if you saw it at all, but in the second quarter, I don't think Aaron Jones played. or the third quarter, one of the they just didn't even put him out there. And then Jones came back in to the point where I thought Jones was perhaps injured, because he had that great first drive, scored the wide open touchdown, had 30, 35 total yards on catches and runs. And it's almost like they're like, oh, wow, this Falcons team is that bad? All right, no worries. We're just going to let Jones rest a little bit.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. Like, hey, don't put him back up.
Right.
Why is Rodgers still out there? You know, that crosses my mind all the time.
I normally am a very nervous Packers fan. Even if I'm up 21 points, it's like, waiting for the wheels to fall off. Mm-hmm. At no point Monday did I feel like that was going to happen. It was kind of just smooth sailing throughout. So if you're going to be like saying, all right, I need a backup. Like if Aaron Jones were to get hurt, well, Jamal Williams has to be the guy. I don't know if that's the case. It's not like a Chase Edmonds. It's not like a Tony Pollard, where there's very clear and obvious backup value to these players. Mm-hmm. Jamal Williams would get involved, but I think you'd see A.J. Dillon do some things. I think Tyler Irvin would be more of a factor in the backfield. Like, don't be aggressive in a PPR league and see, oh, wow, he had 18 points. Got to pick up Jamal Williams. That's a wrong move.
So basically, just do this exercise in your head, all right? So Devontae Adams comes back, and you just pencil him in for 10, 12 targets, and then look at that box score and try to start picking apart where those targets are going to come away from here. And then you kind of can readjust and think, okay, do I really want to put that kind of fat bit on him?
Yeah. All right, can we move to the quarterbacks? I think we've done talk enough about the Packers, right?
Yes. Yeah, I know they need to put a cap on us or something.
Yeah, well, hey. We
could do a whole pod on the Packers.
Our only audience is members from Wisconsin, so everyone's jacked about that.
Yeah, Jamal Williams is 13% rostered in Yahoo leagues for what that's worth, and that's the last little tidbit I'll throw on there on the Packers.
A buck or two if you really want to protect on Aaron Jones, but I'm not picking him up. I just think you're being too aggressive.
We've got a couple other backs we definitely want to get to.
Yes. But before we do that, quarterbacks, right? And I think this week might actually be a pretty decent week to try to find your streamer. If you have Aaron Rodgers, if you have Matthew Stafford, if you have Cam Newton, well, you are actually probably in luck, because I think there's at least three guys who are under 50% owned, which is our Yahoo threshold right now, under 50% owned in Yahoo, that could make a big difference. I'm going to start first with the guy I like the most, Teddy Bridgewater, going against the Falcons. Only 20% owned right now. His production is made a little bit better from last week because he ran for that touchdown. I think it was the first time since that really nasty surgery he had to have where Bridgewater ran for a touchdown. But quietly, the Panthers' offense has been pretty productive. I think back to the Chargers game as well. Bridgewater was throwing really well. And the Falcons missing Kazee, their safety, who suffered a torn Achilles, I think, during the Packers game, is something like that.
Well, and then the
corner's already out too.
Mm-hmm. You've got Ricardo Allen and Keanu Neal both. We're going to be questionable now the day afterwards. Who knows what their status is coming back? I mean, losing guys like Denard, and it's a mess. That whole defense is in shambles, and I know that Dan Quinn's going to eventually pay for it if he doesn't pay for it while we're recording this podcast. But they've really had bad luck, and normally this is an offense that can keep up enough. They didn't quite get there on Monday night, but they're going to have to. This offense is going to just have to score like crazy if they're going to be in any of these games, because this defense, you know your guys, Grady Jarrett, Dante Fowler, they've got some guys in the front seven that are capable. But their teams are just going to throw all over them. I mean, even the Robert Tonyan fourth down conversion, I think, Rodgers had two guys wide open. I mean,
right.
This is just, he could have
gone embarrassing,
to any of three wide open receivers. I cannot, if you did not watch this game, I cannot paint a picture of just how pathetic the secondary is. So you do have a very good point with Teddy. But again, yeah, we'll see how that goes.
It'll be extending to the running backs or wide receivers, depending on what format you play. But a guy like Curtis Samuel, we just talked about Jamal Williams getting 8 catches for 95 yards. Aaron Jones also had 5 for 40. I mean, and multiple times where you mentioned the Falcons defense just simply wasn't there was a byproduct of the running backs getting passes out of the backfield.
Just practicing excellent social distancing, we can get those jokes out of the way.
I think Curtis Samuel, and certainly Mike Davis as well to an extent, are going to be really valuable commodities for Bridgewater. He doesn't throw it deep often, unless it's to Robbie Anderson. DJ Moore runs a lot of deep routes, so the underneath is going to be available. I think Bridgewater is a top 12 fantasy quarterback this week, and I would be very aggressive in picking him up.
Yeah, that's like DJ Moore's just job, run deep routes
and run straight.
A distraction, because Teddy's not actually going to throw it to you, apparently. Anyway.
Unless you're Robbie Anderson. Like, that's the part that I don't get. I think DJ Moore is a better wide receiver, but Anderson has been very clearly the deep ball threat. And we talked about him on the very first week of the podcast. He's really just been a continual presence of 80, 90 receiving yards.
All right, so we got Bridgewater at Atlanta. Speaking of organizations in shambles, Gardner Minshew and the Jaguars head to Houston this week.
Hey, Bill O'Brien, finally gone.
Yeah, finally. I mean, Jeff and Liz talked about this extensively Monday, so we don't need to get into it. We all know Bill O'Brien was bad. Moving on, basically, here. So Gardner Minshew, 46% at Houston. This is a team that the defense just hasn't quite been there, and Gardner Minshew is getting – he's getting stuff out of DJ Shark. He's getting more out of the rookie Laviska Shenault. They have an established running back in James Robinson now. You can see why Gardner Minshew is approaching this this threshold, because you know there's really not questions about any kind of job security anymore, and he's going to continue to be an option that might be better than your QB2 the rest of the season. Definitely worth evaluating.
Well, yeah, I have to debate this week between Matt Ryan going against the Panthers and Gardner Minshew going against the Texans. I feel fine about both. There's no problems with either one, but it's like, all right, which one's going to score in top 7 production and the other one's only going to be top 12? I think that's kind of how you have to look at it. Gardner Minshew, like, I just, in most leagues, I have to imagine they're competitive. I did SiriusXM radio on Saturday with Jim Coventry, and we were debating what this means for Cam Newton. Well, maybe I said Ryan Fitzpatrick was available in 30 or was only picked up in 33% of leagues in Yahoo on Tuesday, and some guy tweeted and was like, you guys have to stop using the software projections, most people are just not even playing in those leagues anyway. And I'm like, you can only go off the information you have, right? Like, this
also,
is,
I mean, if you're actually picking somebody up, I mean, who do people write, make bots to do their waiver wire pickups? Like, a physical person has to actually make the ad.
I couldn't understand what he was getting at. He's like, in non-competitive leagues, Ryan Fitzpatrick is only available. Well, are really 70% of leagues non-competitive? I don't know. So, all right, whatever. But that being said, I do think Gardner Minshew is probably rostered in most places. He is a guy that I would absolutely go and check if he's available. If not, or like if you need to replace Roger Stafford, Newton, start first with Minshew. The next guy I would go to, Daniel Jones against the Cowboys defense, which would let me probably throw for 300 yards, it looks like. I mean, Mayfield was the only one who hasn't thus far, and it's because the defense was getting eaten up by the ground game.
Yeah, and how many of those yards did Jarvis Landry take away with that bomb?
Yeah, to Odell Beckham. That was a great throw, by the way, as well. So, I mean, that's the situation. To me, it's a three-horse race. Minshew, Daniel Jones, Teddy Bridgewater all have top 12 fantasy upside at the quarterback position. You could look at a Baker Mayfield or Fitzpatrick or Cousins or even Derek Carr. Mm-hmm. Derek Carr may be out of that group. Kirk Cousins, we liked Fitzpatrick last week against the Seahawks defense. Kirk Cousins this week, you know, like, I don't know. I think out of those three, Minshew, Daniel Jones, and Bridgewater, one of them's got
to
be available.
The other guy I'd like to throw into the mix just in case is Justin Herbert, who's only 16% rostered in Yahoo leagues. Last week he was pretty brilliant, 20 for 25, 3 touchdowns against Tampa Bay. Granted, you know, on a loss, Tom Brady did his thing. But the upcoming schedule for Herbert is amazing. At New Orleans versus the Jets, at Miami versus the Jaguars versus the Raiders,
and then
bye. So it's a really beautiful schedule for him. The only thing is, if you make the pickup on Justin Herbert, I think, you know, Jeff and Liz touched on this a lot yesterday. You're going to have to deal with like a one half of Tyrod Taylor the rest of the way out, because like legally, just to protect their neck in a lawsuit situation, they have to. I think that's why Anthony Lynn is just kind of being a good organization guy. You know, we don't need to get too far into this, but basically to prevent a massive lawsuit, Tyrod Taylor is going to have to come in for like a half, and then the moment he doesn't score or throws an interception or something, then they can officially make the switch, so they can call it performance-based or something like that. So you got to be ready for that. But other than that, over these next 5 weeks here, Justin Herbert, he's the man. I think the rookie looks ready.
I didn't even think about the lawsuit applicant. I just thought Anthony Lynn was being like head coach obtuse, right? Like, that's a different word. I know, like, we know what obtuse is normally, but like there's a different version of it. It's just head coach obtuse, where they just bury their head in the sand. But you're right, maybe
that's got to be the owner pressuring.
Yeah,
right?
He's like, probably told by higher ups, no, you need to make sure Tyrod is the starter, wink.
I guess if you own an NFL football team, $20-30 million in a lawsuit isn't that bad, but it's also $20-30 million that you'd rather keep.
Yes, and we know how stingy the Chargers ownership is. All right, let's move over to the running back position. We talked about Damian Harris, who I think many are going to consider at the top of the charts for the running backs, but I guess I would say no. I don't want to pause too much, but like, okay, so Philip Lindsay down to 49% rostered in Yahoo leagues. Man, I mean, like, if Lindsay's available, I'm picking him up. This is not a question for me, but I'm not in many leagues where he is available, so I'm not sure I consider that in the same range. And you've done that in past weeks with podcasts. Okay, Chase Edmonds, 35% owned. Kenny Drake left Sunday's game with an injury. Oh, he actually just got the wind knocked out of him. Okay, fine. So that's not a big deal. But I think Chase Edmonds at this point, I don't know if it's fair to say, but I think at this point, Edmonds might be the better player out of that backfield. And I certainly would like to have him on my bench as a running back four or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, at the very least, I think I'm going to roster a guy like Chase Edmonds over your Tony Pollard, Alexander Mattison, those
types. Oh, I'll still take Pollard.
Pollard's
getting involved in the offense enough, but I just like you're getting running back one overall if Zeke got hurt.
Yeah, but still, I mean, yeah, I guess in terms of skill, it's tough. But the thing is, Edmonds is going to get you points every week until that day happens, or if that day might not happen at all. Edmonds will still at least get you points. I found a tweet from Smola DFS, the guy Jerry cites a lot in his hidden stat line, and it just kind of goes to the passing situations. Pass routes through four games, Drake has 85, Edmonds has 64, but targets, Edmonds has 17, and Drake has 5. So Edmonds seems like the pass-catching back in this scenario, and I think, you know, if something, or if they were to realize, like, okay, we don't really have that much of an investment in Drake, you know, maybe we should even this out a little bit more. It doesn't necessarily need a Drake injury for Edmonds to become fantasy relevant, and we're going to have make some tough decisions on Kyler Murray because he's obviously glorious for fantasy, but how good is he actually real life?
Is he new Josh Allen? Did we find a new Josh Allen? Because now, you're going to get scolded if you say that Josh Allen still isn't a good quarterback.
Yeah.
Twitter gets very angry at you if you do that.
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, he's definitely trending in that direction for sure.
I'm fine, Twitter. Bring it on. I still don't think Josh Allen's the thing. It's all right. Okay, so Chase Edmonds, 35% owned. I'm definitely picking him up right away. But let's get to the guys that have really been boosted now because of injury. Nick Chubb is going to miss, it sounds like, at least 6 weeks. It's brutal for basically every team I own, and certainly is hurt worse by the fact that I was completely out on Kareem Hunt. And I feel like the people who drafted Hunt are going to be rewarded because he really wasn't the guy when Nick Chubb was healthy and playing. But here we are, Chubb likely done for most of the fantasy season. Hunt is going to be owned everywhere. If you can trade for him and get I'm fine paying as high a premium as you need because I think Hunt is going to be very involved moving forward. But it's possible D'Ernest Johnson or Dontrell Hilliard could also be factors. Johnson was the guy that had 95 rushing yards against the Cowboys, but much like I could throw for 300 yards against the Cowboys, I could probably run for at least 50 against the Cowboys defense too. Mm-hmm. They are just that bad right now. Do you really buy into D'Ernest Johnson or Hilliard as players that need to be picked up? Because you certainly can have them just about anywhere.
Yeah, I don't think they necessarily need to be picked up in 12 teamers because you do put yourself in an interesting predicament if you pick someone up like, okay, am I actually going to start them now? Or I like my backup running back lottery ticket type on the bench here. And it looks like it's Johnson over Hilliard, but it was very close. Only a 3% greater snap share for Johnson, but the carry split is what's notable, 13-5, and then Hilliard got one target, but the targets are going to go heavily to Hunt, so that wouldn't matter too much now. I mean, it's a big boost for Hunt for sure, but it's not like it's going to be one of these one-man backfield situations, so Johnson's going to get 5-10 touches, carries in a game. You just have to decide, are those 5-10 touches going to be any more or less valuable than, say, Justin Jackson's 5-10 touches over with the LA Chargers, who are dealing with a very similar situation here, except it's almost the opposite. Their pass catching back is the one that got it's like the inverse of it. So so Austin Eckler, he's going to be out, you know, it's looking like 4 to 6 weeks with a hip injury, is it?
Hamstring.
Okay.
Yeah. And
might even be worse.
It looked pretty serious. I mean, he was able to kind of walk off, but then they needed to bring the cart over on the sideline, and he couldn't even get into the cart right away. It looked troubling, but you couldn't actually see the injury when it happened. Normally when it's that severe in those players, and Eckler is a super strong guy, he's played through a lot of injuries through his career, to see him that limited movement-wise was like, oh, man, like you would have thought his leg got completely torn underneath somebody. It didn't really look that way. So I guess 4 to 6 weeks, I guess it makes some sense. I think we need to explain the Chargers backfield a little bit before we can dive more into what you're putting in for a fab budget on Justin Jackson or picking him up. The Chargers, for really as long as I have been covering them, have really been adamant about making a 1A, 1B situation with their backfield. When you have Melvin Gordon, a first-round pick, and an Austin Eckler, who is one of the more talented running backs in the entire league, it makes sense. But even this year, when it has been Eckler and Kelly, I mean, Kelly was a fourth-round pick, but they're getting him 12 to 14 carries a game right now. They are going to make sure that continues to happen. When you are thinking of Justin Jackson in relation to Austin Eckler, I think you have to assume he's the 1B to Kelly's 1A. But Kelly's going to get more of the carries. I think Jackson will come in and get maybe 5 to 6 carries for 40 yards and do some pass catching stuff. They both can receive or can be receivers pretty well, but I don't know if there's one that stands out more than the other. Jackson actually has more of a collegiate pedigree than Kelly does too, and that needs to be factored in. Jackson missed the last two games, came back just this past week. So if you're like, oh, wow, he didn't get that involved, I think it's more due to the fact that they were really trying to take it a little bit easy with Jackson. We know Anthony Lynn loves him. He's owned in 5% of leagues right now on Yahoo. I think it needs to be more like 25-30% by the end of the week.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. I'm kind of looking at the split here to see if maybe Justin Jackson could sneak in and get some goal line work, but there's nothing.
It's going to be Kelly.
Yeah, there's nothing that really suggests that. I mean, Jackson's 6 feet, 200 pounds. Kelly's 5'11", 212. So I could see Kelly. I mean, in terms of the receiving prowess this year, I mean, granted, Kelly's gotten more opportunities, but it definitely seems to have Kelly written all over it. I just think that there's going to be it's basically, it goes back to the whole Browns conversation. Who do you think the 5-10 carries a game are going to be more valuable from? Are they going to be more valuable from Justin Jackson, or are they going to be more valuable from Dearness Johnson? And for that reason, I think you're putting similar bids in these guys, but I do rank Justin Jackson a bit higher in FAB, and I'd put a 6 to 8% number on him.
Okay, and I'm going to actually go a little bit more aggressive on that. I actually think there is going to be more of a Kareem Hunt does everything type of deal. I don't know if the Browns should do that, but I think they're going to be motivated to. They have him under a contract extension that was pretty favorable for them. There's no reason not to feed Kareem Hunt when you're talking about lesser snaps to Dearness Johnson or Hilliard. I think the Chargers probably view Jackson and Kelly similarly. I think they're both similar talents, and that's to say none are that great of players, at least relative to Austin Eckler. Mm-hmm. A bigger point, though, for me, Kelly has had two in back-to-back weeks pretty egregious fumbles.
Yes.
Pretty egregious. Yes.
Thank you for bringing that up. I almost forgot to bring that up because that is absolutely an issue.
I mean, last week or like this Sunday was basically the turning point of the entire game. Chargers are up by 3 scores, get the ball around the 10-yard line on a punt to end the half. Kelly gets the carry, fumbles it immediately. It didn't look like the handoff ever got there, but I don't think Herbert really messed it up too bad. That's back-to-back weeks for fumbles on Kelly. And Jackson really saw a bit more of a workload in the second half as a result.
That's a very good point. Jackson has, let's see here, 71 carries in his pro career and has never lost a fumble. He has fumbled a couple times, so I guess there's that too. So if you're thinking already like a 65-35 split, it probably gets a little closer than that to 60-40 and closer to 50-50. So that I do see that argument for more touches from Jackson.
Well, and Johnson. Then Jackson had a 6.9 yards per carry average last year. Now, most of that, almost all of it, came when Melvin Gordon was on that 4-game holdout. But I still think you're going to see Jackson operate as the spell back, which is what they like to do with the Chargers, and then just be so good and so much more consistent that he works his way maybe even to being the primary shareholder. So I'm going to invest more like a 10 to 12% of my budget on a Jackson, and I'll probably do the 5 to 6%. And this is just to reinforce what I'm saying. I think I'd rather have Jackson than Damien Harris.
Yeah.
And I would rather have Jackson.
That's what it always goes back to, right?
I'd rather have Jackson than Robert Tonyan, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely both those guys probably over Tonyan. But yeah, it comes down to Harris or Justin Jackson. And you know what? I think I agree with you. You've been covering the Chargers long enough. You know, we all kind of have side beats here, and the Chargers are Joes. You've been covering that long enough that I think you can talk me into that, and I'll trust your opinion on that one.
If Chase Edmonds is available, yes, go ahead and pick him up instead. If Philip Lindsay is available for some reason, yes, go pick him up instead. But Jackson, not Harris, not Tonyan, Jackson is probably my top option. I'm still not using a number one waiver wire claim on him. I think it's just going to be too inconsistent for maybe what amounts to a month.
No, the way that this season is going, there's going to be someone better next week or the week after to put your number one claim on.
But pretty easy for me to wait off on that. So.
Yeah, but Fab, there's a modest bid is in order.
Yep. All right, so let's move over to the wide receivers. Before we do that, I want to get a word from our sponsors, StableDuel. Are you dominating your fantasy league? Well, now there's another game you need to play. Imagine fantasy for horse racing. StableDuel is live with daily contests offering thousands of dollars to be won each week. Download the StableDuel app, create your account, and start selecting your horses today. Compete against other players for winner's circle glory and big money prizes. New to racing? Don't worry. StableDuel is simple and fun with low-level entries and big payouts. Name your stable, select 10 horses within your bankroll, and watch each horse accumulate points depending on where they finish. Invite friends to compete against and show them who dominates at sports, including the sport of kings. Download the StableDuel app and build your stable today. Get in the action of StableDuel. Play, race, win. Okay, wide receivers now. I mean, we talked a lot about Robert Tonyan, who's obviously tight end. We'll get to a few more of those guys out there. I think there's kind of a sneakily interesting factor, especially in deeper leagues. Now, if you're in a 10-team league, I imagine most of these names aren't going to be attracted to you. T. Higgins, he's only rostered in 33% of the leagues. Tim Patrick, I mean, K.J. Hamler, Noah Fant, they're out. Broncos got to throw to somebody. Scotty Miller has now factored in. Mike Evans was in and out of Sunday's game with an injury. Chris Godwin missed Sunday's game. Laviska Shenault has been more involved with the Jaguars. There's a lot of options out there. Like, who is your top target out of this wide receiver group?
I still think that the first name that you punch in any case, is T. Higgins. Because, I mean, we saw, especially towards the back half of that game that the Bengals played this week, that A.J. Green just wasn't on the field.
He's done.
I mean, A.J. Green goes on your drop list.
Yes.
I mean,
I've been saying that for years.
Yeah, I mean, we've said this since draft season. Like, if there's not really such a thing as a don't draft list, but if you were forced to make one, kind of gun to your head situation, A.J. Green would have been on it. Finally, that has came to fruition here. It is the T. Higgins show. He is the top receiver you pick up for long-term rest of season upside, though definitely don't fall into the trap where you pick him up this week and then rage drop him because he plays the Ravens and had Marcus Peters on him all game.
Good point.
So yep. It's a very, very bad matchup this week. Don't get me wrong. There's no way around saying that. I expect probably another Boyd-heavy week. Boyd's going to continue to be the leading man. But T. Higgins has plenty of opportunity to continue to take this job and run with it the rest of the season. Him and Burrow seem to have chemistry. He's the guy. 6'4", 215, obviously second-round pick. The guy... He's been exceptional in what I've seen from him this year, and A.J. Green's job is now his. There's you know, no argument there, really. So you go with him as your long-term guy, but you just need to be a little bit careful about this week and this week only, because guys like Patrick and Scotty Miller, you know, might be in better situations just this week. Miller, of course, has that injury that you got to watch out for. So, you know, you already missed practice with a hip injury, but the
situation... And they play Thursday night. I mean, that's a big... They play Thursday night as well, so that's why we know their status. There is one receiver, like, I for sure T. Higgins, but I already have T. Higgins just about anywhere I can. There is one receiver that I would consider instead. Laviska Shenault, he caught 5 of 6 targets for 86 yards. He again carried the ball in that loss to the Bengals this past Sunday. It was great. You mentioned the Bengals did well. They have the Ravens this week as a Joe Mixon manager. It was fun to actually have a good week of Joe Mixon. Now we're going to be back to whatever this is. But quietly, I was watching that game and thinking, man, Shenault is just explosive. And you haven't really seen it before. Three catches, 5 catches, but each of the past 3 weeks never had more than 40 yards. This was different. And I think when you have a solid matchup like he does against Houston this week and then the Lions next week, that's a guy that I think you can say, hey, wide receiver 3, easy, flex, easy. Mm-hmm. And that I would be very interested in committing maybe 12 to 15% of my budget in a 12-team league if he wasn't already available.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely seeing him playing wide receiver 2 the rest of the year to Shark. And looking at the schedule, he doesn't play a team that is in the top 10 against opposing wide receivers in standard formats until week 16 against the Bears. So the schedule for the Jaguars wide receivers looks pretty great moving forward. There's a lot of pretty poor defenses on these books, and that only helps a guy like Shenault, who you buy the skill set already, and now that it finally looks like he's getting the opportunity, you know, you put the two pillars of fantasy together, and here you are. I mean, he's kind of like the new Jefferson or the new Ayuk, you know, the when rookies that are ready to go here and going to be a factor in fantasy. Their preseason's officially done now, remember?
You're right.
Now it's the rookie regular season.
Well, and again, pointing out Jefferson, back-to-back 100-yard weeks now. I mean, we were all in on Jefferson last week. I think Shenault has that talent right now. There's been a lot of people that I've known that were on Shenault. Mario and John were talking about him, at least relative to his speed, and we're saying Rager's the way to go, and that's fine. I understand that too. But I have a good friend, Travis Elliott, who used to work with RotoWire and has done a lot of work. He was on Shenault really since his days in Colorado and has been saying he's a talent. I think it's pretty clear we're seeing it right now on the field. There is one name you mentioned, Tim Patrick, when it comes to the Broncos pass catchers. I get concerned. I get it. K.J. Hamler, Noah Fant look like they have pretty serious injuries. Noah Fant was very regularly getting involved in that offense. We know Cortland Sutton's done for the year, so really it is just Jerry Jeudy. I just don't like the thrower whoever is the starting quarterback for the Broncos makes me really hesitant. Mm-hmm. But Patrick did have a pretty good game last Thursday against the Jets.
It's really early in the week, but there's a slight chance Drew Lock is back week five. And, you know, I watched probably more of that Thursday night game.
It was actually kind of fun.
Sanity. But Brett Rippon seemed to be okay. I mean, he's going to make some bad decisions. He took a couple of hits there, but he also slings it a little bit. I mean, got a little bit lucky on that pass to Judy when Judy made an amazing play here. Yeah. But, I mean, he's a guy that's not afraid to step in there and throw downfield, and that's great for a guy like, you know, well, especially Judy. But, I mean, like you said, if Hamler and Fant are out of the mix, I don't see Jake Butt or Deshaun Hamilton or Deontay Spencer or Nick Vanette coming in and just lighting things up from a fantasy perspective. So Judy and Patrick should be seeing, you know, 80% of that team's targets that are going to pass catchers.
They play the Patriots, though, this week. I mean, that's another factor of that. What's the over-under total right now? Probably under 40 or close to it, especially if Newton is unable to play. Like, I just don't see a lot of scoring happening. The one weapon the Broncos have is Melvin Gordon, and we know that Bill Belichick is very good at taking away one specific player. So maybe Patrick gets more involved. But I think that six catches, 113 yards, and touchdown he had Thursday against the Jets is probably more of the high mark that we'll see in his season.
Yeah, no, I agree. It is a lot of it of a case of buying past production as opposed to future production. But again, this is one of those pickups where if your leagues run on Thursdays or what have you, you have to watch the injury report of those other guys, see who's going to be around, and then, you know, then Patrick sneaks into that wide receiver three flex scenario. There's no total out on the Patriots-Broncos game this week yet.
For good reason.
Yeah, for good reason. Everyone else has got an over-under all set here, but that is one without one, and I could see that one coming out a little bit late, too.
Alshon Jeffrey logged two limited practices last week. Greg Ward has been the main receiver, at least this past week, in the win over the 49ers. I loved his over-under. They gave it 4.5 receptions, and, I mean, the guy was like he's getting all the targets out of the wide receivers. You have to throw that position at least once. And then Travis Fulgham gets this like random touchdown at the end. Travis Fulgham was a practice squad guy for the Packers, and Rodgers really liked him quite a bit. So it's interesting. I think Greg Ward is something. I don't know how good that is, but I think something, especially in deeper leagues, is better to have than nothing.
Yeah, let's do another little exercise here. Sunday Night Football against the 49ers. The wide receivers for the Eagles, John Hightower was the highest snap share, 80.6%. Greg Ward, 77.4%. Travis Fulgham, 59.7%. And Deontay Burnett, 30.6%. And you know that they've got a couple tight ends here that are more than capable here.
Really, only Ertz, because Goddard's out.
Yeah, Goddard's out. So, I mean, that's why guys like Alshon Jeffrey squeeze their way onto this list here, because I know the relationship with the organization hasn't been prime, you know, over the last couple of years, it seems. At least it seems that way from an outsider's perspective. But Carson Wentz, again, there's another question about him, but I think the eventual return of Alshon Jeffrey could be a real sneaky thing for fantasy people. I mean, we're going to talk about Alshon Jeffrey in, you know, a week or two, and you know, when they came in fully loaded with everybody else and Rigor being a factor and everything like that, I wasn't so excited about Jeffrey, but they're down to the bare bones now, and he is a playmaker. You know,
like, is he the same as AJ Green, though? That's where I get a little bit. I would love to see Alshon Jeffrey be a thing again, because he was really a fantastic fantasy asset. But I was correct on AJ Green last year. I mean, he was just injury prone, and he was old, and an offense that didn't look very effective for fantasy purposes. I think we could probably say the same thing about Alshon Jeffrey at this point in his career as well. Injury prone, a little bit older, in an offense that isn't very fantasy effective. I don't like it. When there's one guy like Greg Ward, sure, if he's going to get you guaranteed 7 points like he would in a full point PPR league last week, I'm fine with that. But I don't know if I want to go pick up Alshon Jeffrey and wait for the inevitable, I don't know, four or five catches.
He's 30 years old. This is his age 30 season. So
he's not really, as old as AJ Green.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's really hard to just go ahead and say he's completely washed, right? Now, he is coming off the second lowest yards per target of his career in 2019 across 10 games. But I mean, the opportunity is going to be there. So even if the skill's only 3/4 or 60% of what it was, I think the opportunity is definitely going to be there. I don't think we're going to see too many more Fulgham games moving forward. So he's a guy that, again, very few of us have the luxury of having this extra bench space. But if you do have a guy that you're going to drop anyway, you know, I would drop AJ Green for Alshon Jeffrey, and I don't think that's too outlandish to say.
Okay, interesting.
Because that's the way you frame this. So I mean,
I suppose.
But AJ Green's like fantasy purgatory, right?
Well,
you can't put him in. I know we don't own him,
right?
But if you did own him, if you got auto drafted, or you know you paid a random family member to do the draft for you, doesn't know what they're doing, and you ended up with AJ Green for whatever reason, it's fantasy purgatory. I mean, you don't. It's even, I don't know, it's a little bit better because you don't have to cut him.
With A.J. Green, we know what it is there, right? There is at least upside in this scenario for Alshon Jeffrey. That's kind of how you're phrasing this.
Yeah, exactly.
That's fair. Mm-hmm. Can I give you one more wide receiver name?
Let's hear it.
Olamide Zaccheaus.
Zaccheaus,
thank you. I feel like I need to throw in 14 C's in there because his name has two C's. I don't get mm-hmm. it. Anyway, this has been a guy that Mario Puig, who does a lot of great stuff for us in RotoWire, has been talking about, since March. It was James Robinson and Zaccheaus who were the two main options that he was talking about and saying Zaccheaus is better than Russell Gage. Well, I don't know if we're going to really see if Zaccheaus is better than Russell Gage, but if Julio Jones is going to miss time, and it certainly looks like it after he left the first half with the aggravation of his hamstring injury, mm-hmm. there is room for a third receiver to be fantasy relevant in that Falcons offense, and I don't care if Dan Quinn's fired. I think that happens the entire year. Zaccheaus was not too bad over the middle of the field mm-hmm. and really looked like a strong runner after the catch. I love him quite a bit to the point where Higgins, Chenault, and I guess if Scotty Miller is playing, but Zaccheaus after that, and I'm going to be bidding him up everywhere.
Oh, geez. I don't think you're going to have to bid him up everywhere. I mean, I know people are fresh off that Monday Night Football performance, but if you're bidding more than a dollar or two on Zaccheaus, I don't know. It just seems a little bit unnecessary to me. He was getting soft coverage mm-hmm. at the end of that game. You know, the Packers were just going to let him have the middle, and they were going to double and triple cover Calvin Ridley. So, of course, you know, Zaccheaus comes in and does that, but I am not ready to commit to that being something that you can rely on the rest of the season. Now, if you got more definitive answers on Julio Jones being injured, he was going to definitely miss the next 5 weeks or something like that, yeah, then that comes into play. But this is an organization that's about to be in chaos here if they're not already
in chaos. Then why play Julio? They're a franchise, mm-hmm. right? I don't know. I just...
Julio their franchise? He's allergic to the end zone. I mean, anyway.
He's too old.
Ridley. It's Calvin Ridley City.
Oh, my God. Shut up about Calvin Ridley.
My God.
You can't stop talking about it.
I know. I pretty much cried last night when he couldn't catch a single pass. And not for lack of being open for anyone who saw that game. I mean, Matt Ryan underthrew him multiple times. There's a deep post, and then there.
I thought Jair actually looked pretty good in coverage against Calvin Ridley throughout most of the mm-hmm. night, and it was an underthrown ball, but Jair was on him for most. Mm-hmm. And that, like, I tweeted out last night, if you were like, the Packers defense has nobody in the secondary, that was your game to be like, no, because I thought Jair really took a step mm-hmm. on the national stage to make people aware of him. Anyway, let's move to the tight ends, some defensive streamers. I don't know. Like, we already talked about Robert Tonyan quite a bit. I don't think there's much more to the tight ends. Mo'Ali Cox, he keeps scoring. Mm-hmm. He only had two receptions that game against the Bears, though.
He's basically defying all the metrics that say Jack Doyle's running more routes.
Right.
Jack Doyle's on the field
Trey
more.
Burton came back, too.
Yes,
we talked
exactly.
about that last week as well.
But Mo'Ali Cox keeps scoring touchdowns. It's a dangerous game to play, but it's a name that's on the radar, and he's still under 50%.
There's a few Ask an Expert questions I get every day, and they talk about leagues where it's only touchdowns scored. I guess in that situation, I would be considering picking up Mo'Ali Cox, but if you are playing that type of league, just please find a different passion, because that's not it. That's not the
touchdown one. Only league.
Touchdown only leagues are just not it. I'm sorry. And I love fantasy football, but I don't think I'll ever play that one. OJ Howard, he is done for the season. Achilles injury. Cameron Brait did catch that touchdown pass mm-hmm. Against the Chargers in that win. Gronk is being a pass blocker, mm-hmm. runner pass blocker, like he talked about. I don't know. Like, I don't think I really want any bit of Cameron Brait, but he's at least a name and has been mm-hmm. a reliable name in fantasy circles for many years, other than when Bruce Arians has been around.
Yeah, he's been around. I thought it was worth a mention here, given the status of OJ Howard. Dalton Schultz, who looks like he's pretty injured. He's over our 50%.
Oh, I was gonna say he's been picked up
this year.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you're desperate for a tight end, see, I'm losing Noah Fant, and it's rough, and it stinks. But I never drafted him as my number one tight end.
Right.
You know, and I finally got Kittle back in some leagues.
Oh,
you know,
man,
I,
that was glorious.
Yes, it was so great to have, you know, somebody, one right thing go for me this week in fantasy. But So you got to think of some names, but these are tight end two names, really. I mean, there's, yeah. I don't see a lot of tight ends out there that are going to suddenly come in and make a difference for your league. I mean, Drew Sample got more targets this week.
Yeah.
He kind of flips into this fringy group here. But
Liss mentioned that Robert Tonyan is like a top five, top eight fantasy tight end in his Monday Night Observation article, which you can see on the site. Neither of us, it sounds like, are as optimistic as Liss is about that. Mm-hmm. And that felt like aggressive language to me. He's the very clear top pickup from that position. And I think probably is a top three or four pickup overall.
Yep.
But again, I'm not using my number one waiver wire claim on him. And I am also right around that 10 to 12% threshold, maybe even a little bit lower.
And Packers bye week ahead.
That's exactly it. That's why.
Yes. So yeah, just that's the big thing that we got to go to with tight ends. There's not a whole lot here.
Defensive streamers, Cardinals facing the Jets. No duh, you would be picking up the Cardinals last week. I mean, that's what you should be doing if you have an extra roster spot, not going and getting Alshon Jeffery.
Extra picking roster spot. Imagine having those this year.
Oh man,
in 2020.
That'd be nuts. I actually have a few and I've been doing this. So I picked up the Cardinals defense, who weren't the worst start in the world against the Panthers this past week. Jets, no-brainer. Rams in the same capacity going against the Giants this past week and now face another good opponent. I don't even know what their percentage was. Mm-hmm. Cowboys against the Giants. I mean, we like Daniel Jones as maybe an option, but we know Daniel Jones turns the ball over just about every game, at least once, if not twice.
Yeah. There haven't been the shootouts this year like I thought with Daniel Jones. In my head, I thought of Daniel Jones as this year's Jameis, you know, maybe last year's.
That's fair.
Or like even a Josh Allen type where he's going to turn the ball over a ton, but he's going to storm back and have all these weapons. Well, his weapons are dropping like flies, and it's just not looking good for Danny Dimes this year, so I mean, that makes one a target. I just don't know if I could see myself picking up the Cowboys defense. It was really a tough defense for streaming this week. If you looking at the numbers, you know, the guy's under 50% rostered, not a whole lot to like unless you can run out and grab the Cardinals right away because duh. But
do you remember what the Rams percentage was? Like that was one that I was available and looking for in a couple of leagues this past week. They faced the Giants. They have the Washington football team this week. And then the Niners potentially still without Jimmy Garoppolo or Raheem Mostert following week.
I think people listen to us because they're
that's good.
They're
that's good. We want
there.
That.
Rostered in this league, I'm looking at. I've got to change my filter here, but yeah, their roster percentage is going to be quite a ways
good.
Up there. Here, Los Angeles Rams are now. Am I seeing this right? 94% roster.
Wow. Okay. I mean, that would have been way higher than I thought, and I was able to pick them up in two leagues. Okay. Good. Thank you guys for listening and figuring out that the Rams defense is something that needs to happen. Should have been also going on with the Cardinals defense as well because we knew their threats. I need to stress this again. You need to be looking ahead at the schedule if you have a roster spot. I know Jake joked it's year 2020. We don't have roster spots extra.
Yeah, that's a luxury. Imagine that.
But if you do, just in the happenstance, always go and look who the Jets are playing the following week.
Well, the big thing is
be aggressive.
Your competition for the playoffs might be in a worse roster situation than you are. So go ahead and screw them over, right?
Yes.
This is fantasy football. So hopefully we got you a few names to go ahead and execute that strategy with. I know it's a low waiver week and we're not super high on the options out there, but there are still a handful of guys that can improve your team at little to no damage to your fat budget. So so go ahead and do your thing and best of luck. Hopefully we get full schedule this week.
I love seeing the questions too. Keep sending them in to Jake and I on Twitter at JB Fantasy Sports for me, at Roto Jake for Jake. And that does for us in the RotoWire NFL Podcast Tuesday Waiver Wire Edition. Jeff Erickson with his guest, and of course every Thursday John and Mario do a great job of breaking down the games. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.